You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, December 7th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's casual Friday. Do I even need to say it? We'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. And still pouting because we took him out of order, Matthew Film Guy will be here to give us a movie recommendation. These are becoming more important, too, as we get closer to the holidays. People take time off. They either go on staycation or they go see their relatives, let's say in Michigan, and spend most of the time drunk because it's the only way they can deal. And it becomes a good time to watch movies, but of course, can't possibly watch any decent movies. They all have to be really bad movies because your in-laws don't appreciate good movies. I'm just saying, that could be your general experience. I don't know. I'm not a mind reader, folks. I'm doing my best here. Also on the program today, of course, well, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter. Craziness in Michigan yesterday. As the Republicans ram through their bill to restrict the freedom of contract for unions, for workers essentially to decide by a majority vote that they want to become a union. Not signed yet into law. I don't know if it's been passed by both houses. I mean, it happened so quick, I haven't quite figured out. I think they have to pass it in the second, but it appears it will at least pass and then go to the governor's desk. The flip side of that is longshoremen and clerical workers out at the L.A. port, which is the largest port in the country, have seemingly won their strike. So that's good news, at least. There's a plan afoot to perhaps in the Congress to allow the government to garnish your wages for student debt. Yes. Not good. All that and more. But first, we will take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to the inestimable. What? The inevitable? What? Inimitable? What about the unestimable? You can't estimate him in any way, nor can I say the word. Cliff Schechter. We'll be right back after this.
That's why.
That's right, folks. Muckraker, the official metal band of the Majority Report. And before we get to Cliff Schechter, however, we need the official Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, Mr. Cliff Schechter. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, buddy?
I am doing pretty good. You know, things getting a little crazy at the house. I don't know, this time of year.
Well, yeah, what's going on? A lot of shopping for sweater vests?
Somebody commented. I don't know where I wore a sweater. I've been wearing the sweater vest a lot lately on television, and I did get some grief. Somebody said, like, I thought you were going to retire those after Rick Santorum. But I'm actually now wearing the sweater vest in support of Santorum 2016.
Oh, okay. Because I thought it was you. I was, like, watching TV, and I saw you. And I was pretty sure it was you who was, like, just railing against that UN treaty, the disabilities one.
Ah, no.
I was like, what's Sam in his sweater vest? And I was like, oh, wait, that's Santorum. Okay.
No, that was not me. They didn't – I didn't have the opportunity to go on to rail against that the passing of the treaty, which was based upon – our American law and would not change our American law one bit, but would bring the rest of the world, or at least those who signed on to that treaty, up to our standards in terms of treating people with disabilities. But God forbid, I mean, right. Literally, I guess,
literally,
God forbid. Yes, God forbade it.
Even, you know, the guy who pushed for it in 1990 was a Republican president, and the guy who pushed for it in the Senate was a Republican presidential candidate in 1996. But, you know, we don't want to actually look back at a time when the Republican Party put people up who may have been conservative but still actually had both of their cerebral cerebral cortex working, both hemispheres connected to each other.
We weren't planning on talking about this, but I mean, can you imagine what Bob Dole was feeling? I mean, they literally wheel him into the Senate in a wheelchair because he's old now.
He's almost 90, yeah.
And
he was in World War II, which we have to, you know, had his arm shattered.
Yeah.
So let's all say it. I mean, that has to put enough years, I would think, on your life, that the fact that he is almost 90 is amazing. You know,
it's amazing.
Says what the U.S. healthcare system would do if we would actually include everybody in it. But I won't talk about that anymore. Let's get back to Bob Dole.
Well, they bring him into the Senate to watch this vote. And I guess maybe to I don't know if they anticipated, like, there's no way there are going to be this many Republicans who will block ratification, because you need two-thirds to ratify a treaty. And I mean, can you imagine? I mean, I generally don't feel bad for politicians in any circumstance, frankly. but I actually sort of felt like, God, that must have been just horrible. I mean, because this is a guy who was, for the Republicans, a major player in American politics for the Republican Party over the past, whatever it was, 30 years.
Probably one of the most successful majority leaders, you know, I would think, if you count success as in working with the other party and getting stuff done.
And he came in and just basically 39 Republican senators just sort of lined up to spit in his face. I mean, it was just – I was just sort of stunned by the whole thing.
It was stunning that they brought him in and they did that. Here is where it gets more stunning. You had five sitting there, six, I think, if I'm counting correctly. One was a Democrat at the time, Dick Shelby. But you have at least five or six of them. Let's see, Shelby, Grassley, Orrin Hatch, Thad Cochran. I'm missing one or two who voted for that bill in 1990 because they were there. So they voted for it then. That's the start to tell you how much that party has changed and how people that used to be considered sort of reasonable, sort of center right or just conservatives, but conservatives you could do business with, like Orrin Hatch and Chuck Grassley, which if you follow his Twitter feed, you know he's gone completely off the. He's a complete nutball at this point. But and I recommend everybody do follow his Twitter feed because there's lots of good fun. You find out about like dead deer he encounters on the road and stuff. It's excellent stuff. But these guys, all who voted for it back then, somehow are now ideologically opposed to it and voted against it this time. In addition to that, three people that actually had supported it originally backed off supporting it. I don't know who it was. I read Gail Collins had a great column on this the other day. Jerry Moran, the Republican senator from Kansas, actually put out a joint press release with John McCain, I think in April or May, supporting it. He voted against it. Thad Cochran originally voted for it this time, like he did last time, but then changed his vote when it was clear it was going to go down. And there was a third one who voted for it in committee, and I couldn't find out who that was who voted against it. So essentially, that's what we're talking. These guys are so scared still of these Tea Party cranks, apparently, that even the ones that would theoretically be reasonable, I think some of them have just lost their minds. I think Grassley's just crazy at this point. But others, I just think, are so scared. It's just, it's pathetic, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the, you know, this is the, what we've definitely been talking about for a while, which is, you know, you can hear a couple of national Republicans say, we've got to change this, we've got to reform, we've got to reach out to the American people and not be so insane. But they are beholden to their electoral base, which they've created, and it controls, you know, 39 of those senators. And it's basically like, if you in any way function as a rational, empathetic human being, you're out of the club. And
right.
We're going to vote you out, or we're going to primary you. So and we've seen this. Because I know you want to talk about this briefly. I didn't really touch on it because I was out, I think, the day after Costas did this. But following the shooting of by a Kansas
Javon
City
Belcher,
chief.
Yes.
Yeah, Javon Belcher, the Kansas City chief linebacker. He Costas basically quoted a guy who I think writes on Fox News. On Fox Sports.
Yeah, he writes for Fox Sports. That's what's great. Fox attacked. Fox led the attacks against Costas for this, but the guy whose column he quoted on air was at Fox Sports.
And basically saying that if Belcher didn't have a gun, he and his mother, the child of his mother, would probably be alive.
Yeah, I mean, all he did, and let me say quickly, just the last thing on the disabilities treaty before we switch, which is key for people to know, out of the eight that voted for it, three of them will no longer be there next time. Lugar, Snow, and Brown. So the Republican Party's actually getting crazier, which you knew already, but just to be clear. When it comes to the Costas thing, it's exactly a similar situation, which is the right, this is one of these issues where you're just not allowed to discuss. Remember, there's never a time to discuss guns because right after a shooting, oh my God, you're exploiting it. And that comes from Fox News, who's never exploited anything like, oh, I don't know, 9/11, Iraq, Katrina, Benghazi and a million other things in between. But you're not allowed to do that, and you're not allowed to talk about it because the right knows that if you do actually talk about it, 80-90% of people will agree with the people who have common sense on this. And all Costas was doing that night, he didn't actually mention the word control. He didn't say anything about gun control. He just said there's a gun culture we have, the way we glorify guns, and that a lot of that comes from the National Rifle Association and people like that. You know, who like to tell people guns are the answer. You should be scared. Somebody's going to break into your house, probably somebody with a darker hue than you. You'd better protect yourself. Guns are the answer. I mean, they pump this crap out constantly and have created this culture where people feel like they have to have guns. And the part he quoted, you know, the word he quoted from that was a great piece by this writer, Jason Whitlock, who said essentially that guns bring out the worst in people. They allow you to do things. You end up picking fights you wouldn't otherwise pick. You behave. I mean, there's just no doubt. It's common sense, but studies will tell you that too. And so his point, point was there's some things you can do by law. And he wasn't even talking about that. So there's other things you can do. You know, a lot of what changed behavior with cigarettes is when we change the culture around
right.
it. You know, around what was acceptable and what was expected of people. And I think that is another facet of this, which I don't even often talk about because I often talk about the politics and the
right.
law of it. And then, you know, when he went on shows afterwards, he did give his opinions, which were that we should have reasonable regulations and whatever. And, you know, a group I always disclose I do work with Mayors Against Illegal Guns. And what did we do after the election? We did polls in three swing states. I think we might have talked about this last week. Yep. In Colorado, Virginia, and North Carolina, that showed that not only did people trust President Obama more than the NRA after the NRA dumped in $12 million trying to destroy him, but so they failed on that count. They failed on electing their people. They got a 0.82% return on investment the Sunlight Foundation gave them. They lost six of seven Senate races they spent over $100,000 in.
That's like a Majority Report marketing ROI, as we call it.
You have to at least be at 0.83.
I don't know.
What the NRA did on election day made Karl Rove look like he had a successful election day.
Right.
Let's put it that way. And key, you know, I work with, again, I work with Mayors Against Illegal Guns. Well, one of the co-founders, Mayor Bloomberg, started a pack, independence pack, going after people on who are terrible on guns. And what happened in California, Joe Baca, Blue Dog, who's terrible on everything from fiscal, quote-unquote, cliff to guns, to abortion rights, and anything else that you probably believe in if you're listening, the new California system set it up so that you had the top two vote-getters in the primary, whatever party they were, would run the general. So you had a more progressive state senator running against this incumbent Blue Dog, and this PAC supporting reasonable gun regulation came in, attacked Baca, and he lost. So the key lesson now is that you don't just get to take free votes anymore on guns, which is such an important lesson. That if you attack the Bob Costas's out there, and if you support insane things like not having background checks, and you do that stuff, you may pay a price. In fact, it's likely you will pay a price.
And this again gets to this broader point. If you had turned on Limbaugh the next day, he literally spent, I think, an hour of his show listing off occasions where people got killed or were killed, I should say, or murdered by something other than guns. Now, it's not hard in a country where we have, I don't know how many murders over the course of a year, you know, certainly double-digit thousands, to come up with, you know, a dozen examples of someone being killed by a spatula or something. I mean, honestly, that's what he was doing. And,
right.
And of course, you know, this is the way that Limbaugh makes his arguments. He finds one narrow example and then says, see, guns
right.
aren't the only thing that kills people. But
any,
of course,
can you imagine taking that into any course in logic, Sam, showing up to a
right.
class in logic and
right.
bringing that
the funny
in?
Thing is, the funny thing is half the things that he talked about were actually failed plots. Which
right.
just proved the point. You know, like, this woman tried to murder her husband by feeding him fiberglass for, you know, 6 weeks in his pudding, and he finally figured it out, and they ended up getting divorced. Well, that's the point. Had she used a gun and walked up to him in the head, boom, that would have been over in a flash.
See, that is the whole point. I mean, remember the time that guy, the Marine, and he lost his mind, Charles Whitman, climbed up into the bell tower at University of Texas, Austin,
uh-huh.
and started throwing knives down at everybody below and
right.
killed like 30 of them?
Right.
Remember that? Do you remember the time that the guy, you know, who lost his mind in Aurora, Colorado, walked into a movie theater and started throwing spatulas at people
right.
and killed 12
right.
of them. I mean, it's just, I mean, that's why his argument is so utterly stupid. It's not, nobody is sitting here saying the day that you have reasonable regulations of guns, the day that you start having a national background check so that people who are criminally, you know, have been proven to be criminals and who are mentally unfit and others, you stop people, at least you try to stop as many people like that as possible from getting guns. And I will remind everybody, had those checks been in place, and had that been a federal system, Columbine, Virginia Tech, and a variety of the other recent massacres we've talked about would not have happened. It's not to say none would happen, and it's not to say that Jevon Belcher wouldn't have still been able to do what he did. I don't know what his history was. But if you change laws and you change culture and you make it something where people don't feel like they have to have a gun to protect themselves, that they're not getting pumped all this propaganda by Fox News and by the NRA and others to you know, to be in a constant state of fear that somebody's coming to kill you, somebody's going to break in your house, which really happens very few times statistically every year. It's not to say you shouldn't get a security system if that makes you feel safer, do whatever. But, you know, and again, this isn't even something that we're talking about in terms of law. It's culture.
Right.
It's that people shouldn't feel like that's what they should have to do, and some will anyhow. But that was the conversation, by the way, that he was trying to get started. And they don't want that conversation to happen, and that's why Rush Limbaugh will do what he'll do.
I think we're going to see more of that conversation, because I think it's one of the few areas where the right feels they can agitate and not pay an electoral price. And, you know, they're going to need something, you know, like now that Benghazi doesn't seem to be capturing their imagination. You start to see like the war on Christmas crop up because they got nothing else to talk about. And then I think guns is going to be a big part of it. But
you're right. They need a constant. They need a gun. I mean, they already did it with Fast and Furious, which is about 90% to 95% manufactured controversy. It was a stupid decision made by some guys in the ATF who had been left leaderless by who else but the NRA, who wouldn't allow anybody to be confirmed in the Senate. And we're in disarray because of things that the NRA and the right did to make them be that way. And a dumb decision was made, and somehow that became a conspiracy all the way up to President Obama. And that's what you're right. They will do that. The UN's another big one, too, which is why this disabilities thing was so perfect. Because it's always one world government and black helicopters, and that's tied into everybody getting their guns taken away. They will keep trying to do it, but I think they're going to learn this lesson. They don't learn it from what just happened in this election. With how the NRA's people lost and how people that this new super PAC supported won, they will learn it as these guys start going down, because the very same demographics that won't allow them to take away birth control, that won't allow them to stop gay marriage, that won't allow them to continually stop efforts to at least legalize or decriminalize pot, if not legalize it. The same demographics are exactly the same.
Right.
That minorities, women, those who are college educated and others are much more in favor of reasonable gun regulations, the Obama coalition, if you want to call it that, than the old white guys that Fox News appeals to.
All right,
so they're on the losing end of that one, too, eventually. They'll get it at some point when they start losing many elections on that issue like these other issues.
Before we go, I want to do when you talk about one world government, so I definitely want to talk about DeMint leaving the Senate. And speaking of the Senate, I also want to talk about what happened with McConnell yesterday, because that's – well, it's interesting. But I also think – look, I mean, I think there's a lot more to that story going forward in terms of the grand bargain may not be it may end up being a couple of smaller bargains, but before we get there, I want to talk about two guys, both from New Jersey and from New York. And you know, I was on Joy Behar's show last night, and they were briefly talking. I was with Ron Christie, actually, who that's a whole nother thing. I'm gonna put.
Did he offer the usual Ron Christie wisdom?
It was at one point he turned to me and he goes, "How many years have you been in politics?" And I was like, "I don't know, 8, 10." And he's like, "Well, I've been in it for 23. And it was just, it was literally. And then
like
he,
in half that time you're working for Dick Cheney, you passionate
little
fool.
I actually, then I said, yeah, and you've also been a lobbyist. And just as a way, and then he threw his poo at me. But the.
Is there a place I can watch it for fun?
Yeah, you can go. I think Joy Behar's got it on her site or whatever. But we were talking about Cory Booker. And Cory Booker's gone out, and he has been living this week on $30 the week, I think, to sort of bring some awareness of food stamps. It's a food stamp challenge. This is a guy who's been very great about, doing constituent work and this and that. But, and I made a point of saying on Joy Behar, I hate to be a buzzkill, but the guy is also a huge corporatist. He's one of those guys who came out and said, don't pick on private equity guys. This is a guy who works with the Manhattan Institute, which is a big right-wing think tank. And I raise that only because, you know, this is a guy who I don't think is going to be a candidate in 2016 necessarily. It depends on, you know, maybe he runs for Senate in New Jersey. Maybe he runs for governor. But in 2016, I think we are going to see Cuomo, the lesser, I think, is Andrew Cuomo,
the much lesser,
running for president, at least trying to get the Democratic nomination. And this is a guy that I think, you know, we as progressives need to start talking about now so that the rest of the country is aware of who this guy is.
Which is basically a snake.
Yeah, I think so.
I could go off on a rant for the rest of your show about him. To me, at this point, all that people need to know is that you put together the various statements from before, during, and after the election, as well as endorsements he made of Republicans. I mean, the key for people to know is that for New York to become like California, everything's in place for it to become a place where a laboratory for hugely progressive legislation to be passed. And some, obviously, on gay marriage has been already passed. And Cuomo was a part of that. Of course, that was to give himself some liberal street cred so that he could go and do other things that are more conservative. But he has done every single thing in his power, from the endorsements he made to the things he said when asked, to what he's done when this group of people, who some of whom were formerly in Democratic leadership in the Senate, have now broken away to form this independent Democratic caucus. Sounds a little like Lieberman for Connecticut, doesn't it?
Yes. Let's back up, though, and just explain to people who are not aware of what's going on in New York State. The Democrats, if you go by who ran as a Democrat and who got elected in the New York Senate. Now, this would have been the first time, I think, the Democrats would have taken over the Senate in years and years and years. And
for a brief period before they were ditched, I think, right 2 years ago.
Right, exactly. Similar situation. And it would have allowed for a House and a Senate in Democratic control, and obviously the governor in Democratic control.
And, theoretically.
And there was a couple of guys who ran as Democrats who immediately after they won the election said, you know what, actually, though, we may caucus with the Republicans. And Cuomo sat back and said, I don't care what happens. Basically,
I don't care
giving
who controls the Senate. I don't care. And this wasn't just like the Democrats won even by one vote. They should have had a three-vote advantage.
Yeah,
in the Senate.
They, three different people. And you know, New York politics are just stinky, really stinky. But you need the governor to come in and say at this point, I'm going to exercise some of my influence here and make sure the Democrats control the Senate so that we can have a unified government. We can actually go through with proposals. But now this is important because this is the way, and this has almost been thematic of this week. I started off the week on Hayes's show arguing with a guy who sat on Obama's finance committee, a guy named Donahue Peebles, who was arguing for the repeal of the estate tax, not on its merits, but just on the fact that it's going to happen. And then he would sort of vaguely go into its merits. But then when cornered there, he went and said, no, but listen, I'm just talking about political reality. And he did the same thing with the Medicare age.
Although I have to say quickly, but I will continue, I am completely shocked that a guy with the name Donahue Peebles would be on the finance committee.
Well, here is a guy who is saying was saying that the reason why we need to get rid of the estate tax is because African Americans need to catch up, and this is why the Congressional Black Caucus, there was eight defectors from it, supported the repeal of it back during the Bush administration. Half those people who are now out of the House, at least, I think half. And then I didn't realize it, but I Googled him after I got off the show, and it turns out in 2009 he was number 10 on Forbes' list of the wealthiest African Americans in the country. And so it was rather poetic. But the point is that the way that – and this is an important dynamic, I think, when we go forward in the in what's going to happen in terms of the debt ceiling and whatnot. The way that – shrewd politicians argue is that they basically impart a certain resistance to policies that they supposedly and their base wants them to pursue. They impart an opposition with the power to stop it.
They just say we can't do it, and really in the end, we all heard this during some of the previous talks on Social Security and Medicare, you know, when we were going through this the last time, which is it's going to happen anyway.
Yes.
There's no way I can stop it, which, of course, is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, it's not just a self-fulfilling prophecy. It goes beyond that because what it is, in fact, a way of pursuing a certain agenda that they want but not having to take the political heat for it. So, so if you have a divided government in New York, it gives Andrew Cuomo a lot more leeway to deal with, to triangulate and to end up in places where he can go out on the road and supposedly appeal to the sort of those Republicans who are disaffected by the fact that their party has become insane and basically say, like, you know, look, you know, a lot of corporatist policies passed in New York now. Wasn't necessarily my idea, but you gotta compromise.
And even that, it gives Cuomo, if he's got a Republican Senate, he's also able – it's not just what gets passed and the compromise. He's also able to not pass certain things
yes.
that he thinks will be on the that are on the cutting edge of progressive policy that might not play as well in certain places. Although, again, here's the thing that's amazing to me is, you know, you feel like knocking on these guys' heads and saying, you know, something along the lines of McFly, wake up. You know, it's not, you know, do you want 1995 back? I mean, the DLC is gone. The Third Way is trying. They're very cute. But, you know, the days of when these guys, these faux centrists, control the Democratic Party, it's over. They've lost.
Well,
they still win certain battles. No, let me finish them, because I'm not saying that they're dead and that we've defeated them. Obviously, they win certain battles still. There's just no doubt about it. But do you think those guys would have allowed gay marriage to become what it's become? You think those guys would have wanted to talk about abortion rights and birth control? You think those guys would have fought to get taxes raised in the top 2% in the manner in which it's going right now?
Well, now wait a second. Now wait a second. Now this is where I gotta disagree with you, because I think actually that the social issues is the exceptions that prove the rule. That the calculation has been at this point that, like, look, the country has changed in such a manner that it is no longer a progressive ideal. It is no longer the purview of progressives only to believe in marriage equality. I think social issues, the Republicans have gone so far afield at this point with social issues that it's opened up all this space in the middle. And it's, and what it's done, and look, I still contend that this is, you know, this is sort of the way that the Clintons rolled too. You know,
right.
that these type of social issues is a way of maintaining their progressive cred. But at the same time, it also allows them a lot of space to basically cater to their big money people. And
I understand. I know. And
even the big money people are like, you know what? Raise my taxes 3%. You know, who cares what the marginal rates are? It's 3%. Who cares? It just means I got to spend a little more money on accounting to shift this money into some other sort of income tool or whatever. We'll figure it out. It's not that big of a deal. I think the reason why Republicans are arguing against it has less to do with the actual with their supporters, their moneyed supporters, and more to do with the fact that the taxes have just become some type of identity politics for them. It is like their last redoubt where they basically, you know, that 3% of taxes is the functional equivalent of the gays are coming to get your guns. You know, I mean, it's just one more sort of touchstone for them that gives them some sense of identity. But it's meaningless. It's meaningless.
Sam, how long have you been in politics? I'm just kidding with you. I'm just having fun. I agree with you on a lot of that stuff. Where I disagree is that I think that there are a lot of people like Cuomo. Mark Warner is another one. Mark Warner is the only one who could make me not stand up against Andrew Cuomo. If those are the last two standing in the, as Democratic potential nominees, 2016, I think I would just sit the election out potentially. But who play that same game. And you're right. They push the social issues to give themselves cover on economic issues. What I'm saying though is that still they're still behind the times as far as I'm concerned, because in the end, a lot of people that play important roles in the Democratic primary, and there may be some big money guys can overcome that. I don't know. They may be able to still. But a lot of organizations that play important roles and whatever have caught on to this game. And there's a reason that some of these, you know, there's a reason that, you know, in, within the House, there used to be 60-something blue dogs, and they're now like 14.
Yeah.
Some of that's because of 2010 when they lost Republicans. There's no doubt about it. But some of these guys have been primaried out. Holden in Pennsylvania recently comes as an example of that in this past election cycle. In my opinion, there's no doubt that the zeitgeist of the Democratic Party on economic issues too is moving left, and they're fighting a rear guard action to stop it from happening.
I believe that. I'm sold on that. I mean, I think. You know, although with that said, I think, you know, what we're seeing, we talked about last week. I'm pleased with what we're seeing from, President Obama. Although when I see, you know, I'm not clear on this, but when you see President Obama, it seems to me that the turf now has moved to the debt ceiling fight, right? I mean, I think one way or another, tax rates are going to go up. I think the Republicans are going
to
wait.
At least Mitch McConnell seemed to think so, huh?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. All right, let's talk about this then. Let's move to this, because Mitch McConnell had this idea that he was going to offer legislation that he had basically proposed a while back, which essentially gives the president the upper hand in raising the debt ceiling limit, and would require a veto-proof majority in the houses to thwart that effort. So McConnell thinks, like, okay, the Democrats in the Senate don't really even have the votes to support this thing, so I'm going to put it up. And then Harry Reid turns around and says, oh, yes, we do have the votes to do this. And he says, okay, let's have the vote. And then McConnell freaks out and he's like, okay, now wait a second. You got the votes? I'm going to filibuster this. He's
my own bill.
Filibuster his own
bill. Has ever been done in the history of, like,
bill?
The
bill? And, I mean, it, you know, and he will get away. I mean, he's gotten away with it, but he will also get away with any type of political fallout from it, because, you know, who's, you know, you just, Lawrence O'Donnell's the only guy he's going to talk about for 45
but,
minutes.
But I'm just saying, though, can we have a better poster child for when we're trying to reform the filibuster than what he just did? I mean, you know, it looks like there's a good chance that's going to happen now. And he just helped their argument by
yes.
about 1,000%. Who
yes.
offers a bill and filibusters their own bill?
Yes.
And that's how insane it's become.
Yes, and I think that's going to help with Reid. And although I don't know if, you know, what it would have forced McConnell to actually take to the floor and really genuinely filibuster it, in which case then, you know, at a time of slow news, then you'd have like a, you know, hour 23, McConnell filibustering his own bill.
Exactly. Can you imagine the I mean, what he would have had to go through if he'd have stand up in front of the country and have all news outlets outside of, let's say, Fox News and Rush Limbaugh's bloated head.
We are standing outside of Mitch McConnell's office, where he is continuing his filibuster against his own bill. More after the break.
Exactly that. That's what he would have had to contend with. And I think Democrats smartly know this. There are a couple of people that seem to be reticent about these kinds of reforms, even though they're not eliminating the filibuster. They're just reforming something that wasn't in the Constitution.
Yeah, what we're talking about here is, I think, even the most sort of institutionalist you know, Senate watchers have very little problem with. But, okay, here's the point. The president puts this up. I want you to give me statutory authority, essentially, to raise the debt ceiling. There's a lot of people who argue that the president has already a constitutional authority to raise the debt ceiling. There's a lot of people who also argue that there's constitutionally the Treasury can just print a platinum coin worth about $1 trillion and deposit it into the account, and basically, okay, we got no problem. We continually do not hit the debt ceiling. So there's
don't say that. There's a lot of Ron Paulites that just freaked out.
Yes,
the moment you
yes,
said that.
Yes, Bush and changes, his head exploded. The president basically said we're not going to play that game. And so there is a theory out there that the Democrats are going to win on this tax thing. Fine. Great.
Hey, Ann Coulter was arguing for it last night.
Right. I mean, I think
Bill Kristol's argued for it in the Weekly Standard. I think we're getting to that point.
Well, I think there's strategists,
the strategists
in the Republican Party realize, okay, let's now is the time to do a tactical retreat. We retreat back to the Alamo. The Alamo is the debt ceiling fight. And the idea now, maybe they won't go through this again. Who knows? But it seems to me that the president sort of said, OK, it's up to you guys, the Republicans, whether or not you're going to do this. I have no capacity to stop you other than this statutory thing, which McConnell filibustered his own proposal. And that's an opportunity, if the president wants to engage in a grandish bargain, that it could take place. I mean, you know, look, when I hear the chairman of his finance committee going on television espousing this stuff, I started to get a little bit nervous. And,
I understand.
You know, you hear Jonathan Chait today saying, like, so what? Yeah. Let him raise
Medicare age? Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, that concerns me.
Even though he concedes that from a policy standpoint, it doesn't raise any revenue, doesn't save you any money, it's going to hurt people. But you know what? Throw him a bone. What?
That's what we need to stop is that. And I, you know, when Chait was at the New Republic, I used to think a lot of his stuff was garbage. And he's another one who I think has followed that trajectory that I'm talking about, where the smart money has moved in a more progressive direction,
yeah,
even among commentators within the Democratic Party.
Yes.
And he's one of those who I think actually since he's gotten to New York Magazine has been very good. But, you know, sometimes old habits die hard, and he seemed to go back to that. And, you know, did they throw us any bones when they had control? I don't see a reason to throw them any bones.
Well, it's not even just throwing any bones. It's like, hey, you know what? This bone that you've been talking about, this is going to inflict real pain on people. You go out into the marketplace and try and get health insurance when you're 66, 67, and you go and try and get private insurance to the extent that you can or you do, it's going to raise insurance rates for everybody. It's going to be expensive.
Someone should send in the stories of people, and there are many of them, forced to retire by certain circumstances. Sometimes it's actually health circumstances quite often when they're in their early 60s and then just kind of waiting and hoping nothing happens to them. Or self-employed people, others, I know that I'm one of those self-employed people, waiting and hoping, you know, that nothing happens to you till you get to Medicare age at 65 because you've got too much money to get Medicaid. You know, and obviously Obamacare will help that to a certain degree. But for people that still fall through those cracks, and there still will be some of them, not moving that up beyond 65 is important. Frankly, moving it down to 55 would be the smarter thing to do.
Right.
Or how about all of us? But, yeah, that's a whole other conversation. So, I agree. And that's the kind of talk that needs to be snuffed out immediately.
Right.
Because that shouldn't be a bargaining chip. I'm sorry.
Yes, Michael just held up a zero. And the idea that, you know, you should – the eligibility age should be like about 5 minutes before you pop out of the womb. That's what I think.
That's right. I agree with that. Hey, listen, aren't they trying to give health insurance or something to fetuses in Michigan for some whatever reason? I mean, we know what the reason is.
We're going to talk about Michigan right now, but
yeah, I know. There's a lot going on in Michigan. Michigan seems to want to be bidding to become Wisconsin.
Well, I think we're going to try and have somebody on next week to talk about Michigan. But let's just we just got a couple minutes here.
We
got to
talk about Jim DeMint. In a couple of minutes.
Let's talk about DeMint because. This is the argument I had with this dude. Should we play this? Should we play it now? Okay. So Cliff, all right, listen to this.
Do it live.
Yes. And, Matthew, I know you're listening. If you can hang on, buddy, we'll get to you shortly. Okay. Matthew's going to review Red Dawn today, I think.
No, I've been listening. I'm sorry.
He just got very upset when I said that. All right. But so here is a clip. I was on Joy Behar's show, and I really enjoy doing Joy's show because they always bring on Republicans and Republican, you know, sort of consultants who it's just fun to watch these guys try and argue. And so here is Ron Christie, who, like you said, was an aide, I think, to Dick Cheney and to George Bush and a lobbyist and whatnot. And we're talking about Jim DeMint, who was a senator, who is still a senator from South Carolina, but is moving over to the Heritage Foundation. So listen to this clip, and then we'll talk about it.
Let's talk about Senator Jim DeMint, because he resigned. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sort of like it. I mean, the guy is anti-choice, anti-gay marriage. He believes openly gay people and women who have babies out of wedlock shouldn't be teaching. I say good riddance to this guy. What do you say, Ron?
I like him a lot. I think he's pro-life. He's a very nice guy. Here's a shock for you.
Yeah.
But look, the one thing I like about Jim DeMint is that he always said, I am not going to go to Washington to enrich myself. I'm going to stay in the House for a couple of terms.
You can
laugh, but it's true. He stayed in the House for a couple of terms and he left.
And now he's staying in Washington and getting $1 million a year to head the Heritage Foundation as a base salary. He's also going to be able to go out and maximize his profits on his books. He's going to get speaking engagements. And frankly, I think he's actually going to have more power than he did in the Senate because the Heritage Foundation, funds all sorts of right-wing media like Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Mark Levin. And we all know that the Republican Party takes their marching orders from those guys on right-wing radio. And so I think, you know, this is a big promotion.
But Jim DeMint handles a lot of money.
Wait, you've been in politics for how many years in your career?
Oh, 10.
Okay, so I've been in it for 23. For my 23 years in Capitol Hill.
That's because you're older than he is.
Well, for 23 years, I don't ever recall seeing the President of the United States, the Vice President, the member of Congress I worked for, taking their orders from talk radio. So that's number one.
He doesn't have a very good memory, does he?
So hang on a second.
I've seen people actually call into Limbaugh and apologize time and time again, Republicans.
This is almost like the Senate where you're doing a filibuster. Let me finish my point. With Jim DeMint, he's actually being principled, I think, in what he said or what he wanted to do as a member of Congress.
Turn it off. So there it is. I don't know what the argument this guy Ron Christie's trying.
You just owned him, by the way. That was hysterical. You're very rude. I'm much more. When I go on those shows, as you know, I'm much more polite than you are.
Oh yes, yes. Nobody's more polite than me than Cliff Schechter at this point.
I loved it, man. That was awesome. Here's the thing. That first of all, you obviously got him so mad he had to throw the 23 years at you.
That was so much fun. How long have you been in politics?
Because it's like he didn't go there to enrich himself, and you had your facts there, which is great. Fulner, the current president, made just under $1.1 million last year. That doesn't even count whatever he made for speaking fees and other things. I mean, what are you talking about?
Yes, how can you say, like, he would be taking a cut in salary of $800,000 a year had he stayed in office? He didn't go to Washington to enrich himself. He went to Washington to enrich himself.
Right. And here's the thing on top of all of that. He's a crazed right-wing lunatic. I'm not even sure he's actually as crazy as he's power-hungry. You can call that crazy if you will. He's responsible more than any Republican certainly in the Senate. You could add in the Club for Growth and some of the other outside groups for, you know, Senate nominee, self-proclaimed witch, Christine O'Donnell, for the legitimate rape brothers from Missouri and Indiana. He's what made these things happen so that the Democrats, two cycles in a row where they probably should have lost the Senate, have. And is now that same culture. DeMint, before he went to there, also has now already come out against Shelley Moore Capito in West Virginia, really probably the only person, Republican in West Virginia, that could beat Rockefeller if he runs again. So they're doing it again. And she would be, I mean, she's ahead of Rockefeller in polls, if those are accurate. This is a guy that has been a thorn in his own party side because he's insane. He's going to, and so the perfect place for him, of course, is the Heritage Foundation.
So wait, let me ask you this. Do you think and maybe you disagree with this premise, but if you think that a guy like Jim DeMint pushing the Christine O'Donnells and the fringe of his, well, it's not really fringe in a technical sense. I actually think it's the base and maybe sort of the not within the margins, very much so, of the party, but empowering them. Do you think that this is a benefit for those of us who think that this is this keeps the Republicans in a permanent minority, or at least out of sort of broad national power? Do you think that this enhances his power to do that?
Going to Heritage.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, you made the point there, which is it's the think tanks and the talking heads. It's the crazy right institutions of conservatism these days that push their people into untenable positions, that turn these debates, as John Huntsman smartly pointed out, and said, you know, looking down the stage, he thought half the people he was debating against were Fox News contributors, which I think they were. That basically has turned the whole thing into a sideshow because they forced people to take positions so utterly ridiculous that 10 years ago they couldn't have taken, but because of Fox increasing its viewership and playing to paranoia, and really organizations like the NRA we talked about before, the Chamber of Commerce and other, you know, the Club for Growth and others, and Heritage, people need to understand Heritage. Heritage was founded, I know it very well because I've done papers on it, whatever, 1973. It was founded as a right-wing political organization that would have sort of this fake patina of like scholarship.
It came out of the Lewis out of the Powell memo. Out of the Powell memo. Lewis Powell specifically sort of basically said we need to have groups like this to push back against the environmentalists and the labor and whatnot. And it was all a memo that was commissioned by the Chamber of Commerce.
Right. In 1973 is your key year, because in that same year, you get ALEC founded, you get the Heritage Foundation founded, and I can't remember the other one, all founded by crazy right-wing, almost neo-Nazi nut who passed away, whose name I can't think of right now, and it's driving me crazy. I'm sure you'll know who it was. Who worked with the Kors family,
right,
to bring about the money for all these things. It's driving me nuts. I can't think of his freaking name.
Scaife?
Go ahead.
Was it Scaife?
It wasn't Scaife. Stay with me.
I can't remember.
I'm going to look at my Twitter to see if anybody sends, and I'm going to Google while
all right,
we're here.
But the point being that we know that he's going to be at Heritage. He's going to be pushing, and he's going to be pushing his agenda now. He gets paid at
Paul
least.
Weirich. There we go.
Oh, right, Weirich, right.
It was founded by the same guy who found other politicized organizations. In other words, AEI, you can say what you want about it, and certainly it has many problems, and it's become very politicized, but it originally was founded in the 50s as an actual think tank.
Right, the American
Heritage Foundation was founded explicitly as a place to book people, get books written that would change, book people on TV, get books written that would change the debate. Essentially, an organization that was political, that would hide behind being a think tank and move things to the right. And that is what it has successfully done in this country, sadly, at least till recently, and certainly within the Republican Party, completely. So it would make sense that they wouldn't pick an actual scholar to go run it. They're going to pick a guy with bombast. They're going to pick a political guy, a guy who goes and picks fights with Republicans that aren't pure enough and plays to that right-wing entertainment crowd. I mean, yes, I think they're going to empower him with lots of money to now even go further. Who knows where they'll take it from here, and continue to go after people that are considered to be too quote unquote moderate.
Right.
You know, Saxby Chambliss, who voted with the Republican caucus like 93 or something percent of the time, but sometimes doesn't talk in really mean tones.
Great.
So that means he's a bad guy.
I love it. I hope to the extent that they have any power, it becomes so marginalized and so distant from the American body politic that we can then spend most of our time fighting against people like Cuomo, frankly. I mean, honestly,
let's change the guys in our own party while they're destroying their own.
I think I said that 5 years ago, actually, when we were anticipating an Obama win, that I want to see a left-center fight in this country be the central fight that's happening.
But 5 years ago, you'd only worked in politics for 5 years.
I know. I was so naive then. I wouldn't even been allowed to hold Ron Christie's coat.
You didn't have a certain sort of intellectual joie de vivre of Ron Christie back then.
I wouldn't even.
But you're getting there, Sam.
Yeah, the idea of even putting on a sweater vest and sitting next to Ron Christie, forget about it.
I think that's perfect. It ends where it all began.
Cliff Schechter, as always, a pleasure. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we'll be talking to Matthew Film Guy, who will have a film for us to watch or maybe not watch. We'll see. Ooh.
Hey, what happened?
There you go. I doubled up on that. All right, we'll be right back after this.
You, but I am on. Shine, I lose you.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Friday. You know what that means? It's time to bring on a movie recommender, as it were. And, of course, who better to recommend a movie for us than Matthew Film Guy? But before he comes on, ladies and gentlemen, we've got to play the Matthew Film Guy theme song. Matthew Film Guy. Matthew.
Hello, Sam.
Hello, Matthew. How are you?
I'm great. That song always puts me in a good mood.
It does. Do you play it at home a lot?
Yeah, when I walk back and forth between the kitchen and the bedroom, I'm playing that, yeah.
Is that all you do?
Can you not enter a room unless that song plays in full first?
I have another theme for when I go to the living room.
Now, I've been to your home, Matthew. You still live in the same place in Queens, right?
Yeah, I see where this is going.
Well, the point is, you can't get to your kitchen without going into your living room. But
I
know, it's only one step.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
There's no...
That's right. I'm caught. It's just that theme. Every room I go to, I play just that theme.
Do you still have a roommate?
No.
Oh, you don't? So you're there solo now?
Yeah, well, Mary spends a lot of her time here, too, so it's semi-solo.
Oh, wow. Whoa.
Wow.
I like it. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, my edit suite is in the other room, so that's where I work.
Oh, so you have your office. Oh, wow, very nice. And so
exactly.
When, you know, we've been talking to you, what, now for a year, year and a half? You've been coming on?
Yeah,
2 years?
About.
When are you going to make the move?
What do you mean? What?
I mean,
what move?
Well, with your young lady.
Oh yeah, I knew that the conversation was going to go this way. You know, I was actually just down in Florida with my family for Thanksgiving, and actually my sister Alexis is getting married, so naturally all the eyes turned to me and Mary.
She's younger than you, right?
So, yes, she's 3 years younger than me. Although her fiance is 3 years older than me, so I don't know how you want to do that math. It's going that way, you know.
I don't know.
I love Mary, and she's made me a better person. And like you said to your wife, I'm very physically attracted to her, and she's a woman of great strength. I mean, she puts up with me on a daily basis. But honestly, when push comes to shove, I hear a lot of your warnings that you give me through the years about staying single and not having children.
Please,
and
do not
I don't
have
know,
children.
Sam. It's
Don't
hard.
Have children. Do not get married. Because I don't know that anybody could be as lucky as I have been. That's why I.
Oh, I see. Yeah, good call. Good
Thanks.
Call.
Just
Hi, Nikki.
Yeah, no, she's not listening. She never listens to the show.
No, that's right.
She never listens to
That's
the show.
Right. You can't expect your spouse to support your professional endeavors.
Absolutely not. No, that ends as soon as you guys get married. That ends as soon as you get married.
You'll be invited if it happens, Sam. It's
All right. That's
only
all
a matter of
I'm
time.
I'm fishing for a. You know who still won't call me is Chuck Sklar. Do you know Chuck? You remember Chuck?
Oh
right?
Yeah, no, I remember who he is, and I remember the issue there. Yeah.
Yeah. Now Chuck is the head writer for W. Kamau Bell's show, right?
Right.
And we had Hari Kondabolu on, and I ran into Kamal at the Joy Behar show, and I ran into him at some other thing, and I'm like, will you tell Chuck to call me? And he's like, I did.
Yeah, he was afraid you were going to get him fired, right?
Well, Hari was. Hari was nervous about it, but Chuck's the head writer. You can't fire Kamau Bell. And,
right. Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, Chuck will not contact me because I didn't invite him to the wedding. And the wedding took place 8 years ago now. So, I mean, he holds a grudge.
I remember also not being invited. So, yeah, I remember.
Oh, did I not invite you too?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Well, I barely, I didn't know you as well.
I think I may have been on the short list and then some decisions had to be made. That's the feeling I got.
Well, no, you were on the long list.
I too was not
right,
invited.
Right, the long list.
Well, yeah,
I didn't make it to the short list.
But I didn't know you very well at that. I mean, I knew you, but we weren't as, you know, we weren't as
it's all good, Sam. It's all good. All right. I did get to sort of witness it through editing the video, so it feels like I was there in the best way.
Right. Well, no, he's not saying Michael's looking at it like somehow. No, it was that was my way of inviting Matthew.
Yeah, it's like a consolation prize. I get to watch the video for hours
and
hours.
We had a small wedding. We only had like 700, 800 people.
Yeah. And I liked you. You had like a crowdsourced wedding video where everybody brought their camera and you got all their footage and I put it together. So I thought that was great.
Yeah, Nikki's still mad at me for not, because I just didn't want a video taper there. I just find that annoying.
Yeah, they're calling the shots and they're putting you places.
Yeah, they're like, okay, dad and mom, come together. No, please, get out of my face. All right, now, Matthew, let me start by saying this, okay?
Yeah.
First off, let me offer an apology. You recommended last time you were on John Doe, right? What was it? Meet John Doe? Meet John Doe?
Meet John Doe, yeah.
And I didn't watch it. I had every intention of doing so. But do you understand that that now it's like my family, well, two things happened. One is I expended 3 hours on going to see Skyfall. I'm not going to give it away, but I was not happy with that. It was a waste of my time.
Want to share the end again?
No, I accidentally shared the end last time.
I noticed that.
I wasn't happy with it.
I put up a YouTube video of your scathing review of it when you were and a lot of interaction on that one. People agreeing, people disliking you for it, people thinking it was an amazing movie.
Anybody who thought there was an amazing movie was insane. Yeah, no, I got the texture of the character. Whoopie-de-doo. But so I wasted 3.5 hours there. And
you know, I actually went and saw that over Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And I have about 20 seconds on that if you want to indulge me.
Yeah, sure.
Just don't spoil it.
Okay. I'm not gonna spoil it. No, that's not my style. First of all, I want to say that I may have been colored by the theater that I went and saw this in, because down in Boca there's this
iPic
theater. Yeah. All Boca.
All right.
Come on, Sam. You and I, we can call it Boca, right?
Oh yeah, dude. I've been to Boca. There's a great Tequila Willie's there. Or there was 25 years ago.
You know that, I'm forgetting the name of that, like, one major shopping plaza down in Boca.
You know, I was down there 25 years ago en route, I think, to my buddy when we went on spring break. His grandma lived in a gated community in Boynton Beach, and we were just driving around Florida or something. I don't know.
Okay, Boynton Beach, that's different. Well, there's this place called Meisner Park, and they've got it's like Soho or the Hamptons, just like really ritzy kind of shopping center. And they have this movie theater there where their tickets are like $25, but inside the theater there's only like 50 seats, and they're all like leather recliners, and they have like waiter service and a full bar, and they give you a blanket and a pillow.
Bingo.
And it's like this
top-notch.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. You can go to sleep. And so anyway, so I was in this luxurious surrounding seeing this movie, and I actually really enjoyed it. Now, I don't know if I'm not looking deeply enough into it as you are, but to me, Skyfall was about blowback, and that's a very relevant theme for a modern-day Bond, right? I mean, of course, it was a campy bad guy who sort of takes the point on it, but I thought it was a great post-Bond, post-sort of Jason Bourne Bond, although without the shaky cameras, which I appreciated. And I thought all that stuff like Q just giving him a radio was great. And you can't keep escalating the gadgets after 50 years, right? And all the playing against expectations, sort of in-jokes, the ejection seat joke, and, you know, the reveal of the agent's name at the end, and all these sort of nods. I thought that was as far as you could go. I mean, there's nowhere else to go. You can't just keep rehashing the same sort of upping the gadgetry and the tropes.
I just find it so indulgent to, like, go through, like, hey, you know what? We're going to deconstruct this. You know what? Whoopity-doo. Honestly, like, okay.
Well you can go back and watch one of the old ones. You can go back and watch, I don't know, Moonraker.
So what, is this the end of it?
Spoiler alert. Hello, Majority Report listeners. Producer Matt Binder here once again to let you all know that Sam Cedar is once again at spoiling movies without letting people know that he's about to spoil a movie in advance. Skyfall is the movie that Sam went to see last week. You know, he's been talking about how much he hated it all week. And even after he said he's going to talk about it with Matthew Film Guy without spoiling it, he proceeds to give away a major movie spoiler. If you don't want to hear what happens in Skyfall that spoils the movie, skip ahead about 40 to 45 seconds. Take your headphones off or just skip through, fast forward on your iPod or iPhone. This is just a warning, a spoiler alert. You're welcome.
I mean, the annoying part is, like, look, if you're going to kill Bond, then kill Bond. All right? Don't kill M.
Well, yeah, that was,
don't kill
that was a red herring.
Dame Lady What's-Her-Face, who's been in three of them, and then just go back to the new M, you know, and then start the whole thing. Like, it wasn't, you know, if it's over, then kill him off. But all they did was just like, hey, we're doing a refresh. Wait, you just made me pay $15 to sit here for 2.5 hours to watch you do a refresh on this franchise? I'm here because I like the franchise. If I didn't like the franchise,
Sam,
I wouldn't
go
to this
explosions,
movie.
Explosions, there was fights, there was chases, there was all kinds of ridiculous action pieces.
No,
I mean, isn't that what you want out of a Bond?
Yes, I do want that, but I also want like some type of like clever threat. The idea of like, oh, I mean, you know, I'm sorry, dude.
I don't know. The computer thing seemed like a threat. And to me, seeing Bond's childhood home, learning about his past, that's all rich new stuff. So I can see what you're saying about self-indulgence. But
oh, my God.
Did I just say something that you guys just said the end again?
I did?
Yes.
Oh, all right. You're going to have to cut
guys,
it.
I
didn't
talk
it.
About this anymore.
I didn't say it.
Did I say it?
You didn't say it. It was your fault.
I didn't even catch it, to be honest.
Yeah, you did. And now, and Matthew though is talking about Bond's childhood, so he's getting into the texture of the character. So
okay,
yeah.
All right, well, go back.
I think I do understand the texture. Thank you, Michael.
All right, well, just mark the time I said that.
They want to fulfill certain expectations, and if you didn't feel they were fulfilled, then it failed. So you know, there you go.
All right. Well, now let me ask you this: did you go see Red Dawn?
I didn't go see Red Dawn. Mm. I didn't think I needed to recommend that one to you. I know you're going to get that as soon as possible.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm going to buy I'm probably going to go out and buy the DVD.
Of the reviews I read of it made me think it wasn't even going to be as enjoyable as I sort of hoped it would be
on
whatever level.
No, in fact, let me read a review of this right now. The Red Dawn review, which this is really disappointing.
Don't spoil the ending.
Because I'll tell you something. I loved the first Red Dawn when I was a kid.
Yep.
You know,
me too.
What was her face? Jennifer Grey, and who is the was it Ally Sheedy? You know, I had crushes on her. I actually worked with C. Thomas Howell. He directed a film I was in, which was
Name Drop Friday.
Horrible Name Drop Friday. And
D-list Name Drop.
And you know, I appreciated it as kids.
Leah
Thompson. She was great.
You got them confused because one replaced the other in Back to the Future. But anyway, go on.
Okay. So movie review from, I don't know who did this, Lee Patch. This is the only line you need to know about Red Dawn.
Okay.
The sheer stupidity of many of Red Dawn's action scenes could have been quite entertaining, save for rookie director Dan Bradley's panicky, shaky cam shooting style, which makes it hard to see what you might have laughed at.
Classic.
Yeah, it gave it a rating of 1.5 out of 5.
Yeah. You know, and honestly, that shaky cam stuff is what I was sort of appreciative of this Bond movie not having, because all the Jason Bourne movies have made every sort of spy movie, Liam Neeson, all that stuff, like super shaky cam, and you can't follow anything, and it's sort of a... You know, a standard.
Well, you know why they do that shaky cam.
Hey,
you know why they do that shaky cam because it makes it easier for you to shoot action. You have more cutting points, and you can.
So don't you talk badly about Taken, Matthew? That movie is amazing.
Wow.
So look, I have a certain set of skills, and I can appreciate a man who also has a certain set of skills.
Wow, I'm not even sure I know what that means, but so Matthew. Knowing that I didn't see John Doe, but I'm going to.
I'm sure you were just going back and watching Offside or 10 or Late Marriage or The Boy with Green Hair.
No,
right?
You know what the problem is that Nikki got into Homeland, and I think this show is just. I mean, I thought it was like a fourth tier show when I started to watch it, and now I've dropped it down to like a 6.8 tier. Like I don't even know how low it goes at this point.
Sam, I couldn't get past the second episode. I mean, to me, the whole conceit that he's become terrorized from going to Iraq, it seems like the whole show is sort of buying into the Bush frame of where terrorism comes from. I couldn't stomach it.
Oh, the whole, yes. I mean, aside from the just, it's ridiculous. It doesn't make any sense. The characters don't have any real reality to them in any way.
And the politics is all screwy. I couldn't get past that.
But I'm not driving this bus. And so it's like,
I got to watch Vampire Diaries with Mary. Mary makes me watch Vampire Diaries, so I understand what it's like.
If I'm lucky to eke out, I can get a chance to watch Survivor, I'm doing good.
Yeah, well, you like Survivor. So that's,
I do.
You guys have some common ground there.
This season's not so
That's
exciting.
Enough to base a marriage on, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, if you have one good TV show that you can watch. I would say that Battlestar Galactica is probably the number one reason why Nikki and I are still together.
Well, and
spent
I appreciate
so
that.
Many 70 hours sitting on a couch together. That was very helpful.
They'll say we all.
So what do you got for us this week, Matthew?
All right, I actually have two movies that are coming out on iTunes, Amazon, and video on demand.
You know what's a little bit annoying? They all have the same movies, I've noticed.
Yeah, they cross-platform a lot. Netflix is sometimes late to the game in a different story, but if it's on demand and Amazon, it's usually on iTunes as well.
Yeah.
But one is an independent drama that's actually a first feature by a director named Sophia Takal. And I actually, spoiler alert, I edited a trailer for this film. But I like it very much.
Do you get like some sort of kickback for this or something?
No kickback, just a heartfelt belief in this film and a desire to use my bully pulpit, such as it is, to get it seen by more people who I think will enjoy it.
And how much did they pay you to say that?
Zero, absolutely zero.
They didn't pay you anything
to
do the trailer?
I may have a co-credit.
Did they pay you to do the trailer?
What's that?
Did they pay you to do the trailer?
Yes, they paid me to do the trailer. Okay.
All right, so what's the name of the movie?
Maybe they didn't, actually. Come to think of it, I think I may have forewent the fee. No, now that I think about it, they actually wound up using a different trailer for a lot of their press because the one I cut had no dialogue in it.
What are you talking about?
This is totally true. What?
Hold on one second there, Matthew.
I don't know if I have that on here. I don't have as many room for things. I think let's see if we can maybe double the number of things on here for this.
What are you trying to play?
Say, baby, put down that pipe and get my pipe up.
Oh, man, that's
all
an
right.
Oldie.
Okay, what's the name of the movie?
Okay, the name of the movie is called Green, and it's an independent drama made with a very small crew, and it's shot beautifully. It's actually about a Brooklyn sort of intellectual couple who moves out to the country so the boyfriend can try to do sustainable gardening and blog about it. But meanwhile, the sort of bullied girlfriend of the couple tries to bide her time, and a friendly, too friendly local southern neighbor sort of ingratiates herself into the couple, and it winds up in sort of inflaming the jealousy of the girlfriend. And it's very understated. It's very naturalistic performances. The dialogue all feels like it's overheard. It's a lot of long takes, very gorgeously shot. And it's got a real personal, revealing, risky filmmaking about our own inner sort of problems, and not just about looking cool or hip, although it manages to do that too, I think.
All right, Green. All right, that sounds
Green,
good.
Green, by Sophia Takal, starring Larry Levine and Kate Scheele. And then the other film that I wanted to mention is probably more in your wheelhouse. It's called The Shaken Eye, and it's by Kaveh Zahedi, who I'm not sure if you're familiar with his other stuff. I Am a Sex Addict. Spoiler alert, I produced that movie with him for a little bit.
Oh,
but this one I've had nothing to do with. I just like it. And I actually haven't seen the...
Jesus.
I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
But it's about...
Called,
but Kaveh was asked...
Payola.
With
the FCC could probably get us with the payola in this show.
No payola. This is pure heart. This is pure just...
What's the name of The Shaken Eye?
The Shaken Eye. Now, I got to tell you the story about this because you'll find it very intriguing.
The Shake and Eye.
Or the Shake and Eye, like S-H-E-I-K, like the Shake of Sharjah. It's about, Sharjah is one of the United Arab Emirates.
Okay.
So,
right.
So Kaveh was invited. He's a self-reflexive filmmaker. He's made some of my favorite movies, A Little Stiff, and I Don't Hate Las Vegas Anymore, some of these titles you can find. And he was asked by the Sharjah Biennial. They were trying to sort of get to be a player in the sort of international art scene. So they asked a bunch of people to come and make art, and including Cave, for their biennial, their attempt to be this art festival. And the theme that he was given was art as a subversive creation. And he was told the only things you couldn't do is make fun of the Prophet Muhammad or make fun of the Sheikh of Sharjah, who's essentially bankrolling the whole thing. So he said, well, that's what I want to do, make fun of the Sheikh of Sharjah. Right. And it turned into this pretty amazing sort of battle for free speech in a country that actually has no free speech. And it wound up being sort of banned. They rejected it and for being blasphemous. And it's actually very funny. It's sort of like they've been calling it like a Borat meets Michael Moore meets kind of, I don't know, it's like art film documentary, part Albert Brooks maybe. Jeez. And it's actually really funny. I saw an earlier cut, but I'm going tonight to see the full feature for feature version.
Wait, so where can you see this? Is it out?
Yeah, and it's going to be out. It's released day and date. It's also on Amazon, iTunes, Fandor, Vudu, PlayStation, Xbox, all these places.
It's on today. It's so today, as of today.
As of today, yeah, that's right.
You know,
so you can be there.
I think my father-in-law in Michigan, I think he has Vudu on his TV.
Okay. Tell your father-in-law to watch The Sheikh and I.
Oh, he won't watch it. But what happens when we go out there for Christmas is that, within like 4 or 5 hours, I get too drunk to go anywhere. So I sit on the couch, and people are moving around and stuff like that. And so.
And you play with his voodoo.
That's my plan.
Great.
Well, those
well,
sound
anyway,
great. So it's The Sheikh and I, and
right.
As in like.
The Sheikh of Sharjah.
Sheikh of Sharjah and Green. Are the two entries? Well, Matthew, I think you've outdone yourself today. I hope you've enriched yourself in some fashion. We don't have to get into the details, but the kickbacks that you're getting for this, it's great.
No. Well, I'm glad to have been of help to the show, Sam. And I filled out your survey, and I try not to mention myself too many times in it.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. Actually, that reminds me. I haven't been mentioning plugging the survey. People should go take the survey if you haven't taken it. We'll have a link in every morning. We have a link to it. So, Matthew, film guy, thank you so much.
My pleasure, Sam. Thank you.
All
take
right.
care now.
Talk to you soon, buddy. Appreciate it. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And do we have a song from Jimmy Reefergig?
We do.
Oh, my God. He's back at it. Let's.
I hope there's shout-outs to us again.
Yes, let's see. All right, let's play this baby.
And it heated up, it gives off a chemical that's similar to estrogen. And worst case is some women might have little beards, but we don't want to do that.
I'm video tracking Paul LePage. Yes, I'm video tracking everything he says. Video tracking every place that he's been. Video tracking, let the fun begin. Videos of famous LePageisms, I can't get enough of them. Feeling the rhythm. Ha! Look out!
So, worst case is some women might have little beards, but we don't want to do that. Chemical is similar to estrogen.
Ignorant jerks don't only come from the south. Better listen to the man, got the foot in his mouth again. The page.
So, worst case is some women might have little beards, but we don't want to do that. Chemical is similar to estrogen.
He don't give a crap about studying the books. He don't give a crap about how stupid he looks. Till they get trounced in the election. Now Paul's pissed off and looking for a distraction. And it's this video tracking.
Wow, I like it. Now, we should have probably set it up better. But it's video of Governor Paul LePage in Maine saying that the health dangers of BPA, which is bisphenol, they've taken it out of all the drinking bottles that they have. It's still lining cans, apparently, in most cans. That Paul LePage said the worst case scenario is that some women may have little beards from it because it's like estrogen. Unbelievable. And there's Jimmy Reefercake outing Paul LePage for being such an idiot. Good for you, Jimmy. I like it. So now he's getting into the local and did not a single mention of weed or any Jimmy Reefercake. Yes, he is from Maine. All right, so I guess it's going to be Freebie Friday today.
Jimmy, I do enjoy the ending now, though, that you've been putting, that you didn't put this time, where you go, Jimmy Reefercake songs available now at iTunes.
Well, don't encourage him too much.
I guess
enough. Let's not get carried away.
A few is enough, yes. But this is a really good song.
I like the entrepreneurial effort of that. I like that, too.
All right. Well, good enough. All right. Number 646-257-3920. The IM machine is up. You can IM me at Majority FM or at Jabber. What is it? MajorityFM at Jabber.org. What's this? Oh, this is a wonderful story coming from the Daily Caller. Cecil Pearson isn't getting any help from legislators in North Carolina in his effort to remove his illiterate, developmentally disabled daughter from the electoral register more than a month after officials at her group home helped her vote for President Barack Obama. Cecil Pearson says Darlene Pearson should have been purged from the voting rolls a long time ago, noting that he has contacted several officials about the issue, including North Carolina Democratic Senator Kay Hagan. Wait. Kay Hagan said she couldn't help me. She couldn't do anything about it. It was a nice way of telling me she didn't want to get involved. You're telling me the senators want to get involved in disenfranchising your daughter's vote because you don't like the fact that she voted for Barack Obama? Under North Carolina law, his daughter, who functions cognitively at the level of a 7-year-old, is permitted to vote. Huh. But I guess this guy just really wants to strip her of any sense that she is an adult in any way. That she has any, this guy's just horrible. My daughter was registered to vote in 96, but this is the first time she voted in 2012. The child. Is she a child? The child has been a group home for 20 years and has never mentioned voting. And then the night before the election, the administrator of the group home holds a round table with my daughter to see who's registered to vote. The child? Well, she's at least 20 years old. Doesn't say how old she is, but it gives you a sense of what this guy thinks of her. What an unbelievable... This guy's going for the worst dad of the century.
If people with the cognitive level of a 7-year-old couldn't vote, then who would vote for Republicans?
No kidding. Let's check Cecil Pearson's cognitive level. I'm getting a sense this guy's somewhere around his teens. Unbelievable. Yeah, right. I hope my daughter, when she becomes a teenager, is not as much of an a-hole as this guy is. Jesus. Unbelievable. Let's go to the phones. You're calling from 469 area code. Who's this?
Jessica from Texas.
Hi, Jessica. How are you?
Good.
What's up?
I just wanted to call about the whole libertarian challenge thing.
Okay. Are you a libertarian?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you want to what is it that I've said about libertarians that you might want to dispute in any way?
Well, it seems that whenever you talk about free markets with people and the government's involvement in the market, it seems like there's like confusion about how the government should be involved in the markets in general.
And how do you think the government should be involved in the market?
Well, the purpose of the government is to protect property rights and punish fraud and theft, basically. So the government should be involved to protect property rights, but they shouldn't interfere with voluntary exchanges, basically.
So they shouldn't be involved in contracts at all?
No, they should. They're there to enforce contracts, too.
Okay. But they shouldn't impede contracts. So let me ask you this. What happened in Michigan? Do you have a problem with the so-called right-to-work statutes? You must, right?
Right-to-work statutes? I don't know. I don't really know much about that issue. Can you explain what the statutes
do? Well, let's talk about something that you do know about. I mean, what is it that you do you have a problem with? Do you think our government is overreaching in some fashion?
Yeah, I mean, you talk about the FDA a lot, right?
I mean, on occasion, yes. Do you have a problem with the FDA?
Yeah, I mean, if a person wants to use a drug that's not FDA approved, I think they should be able to, you know?
Yeah, I mean, so you think that there should be no government testing to make sure that medication is safe?
I would be okay with government testing if they wanted to and if it was funded through voluntary contributions. I just don't think that they should prevent drugs from being sold.
Let's presume if you had an agency that was testing just by voluntary, voluntary funding, you couldn't really necessarily trust that, right? I mean, if I came to your town and was selling snake oil and I said, this is an elixir that's going to cure your cancer, and I have the testing results to prove it. I funded this test and it came out fine. So you just think that it's somehow inhibiting people's, so you don't think there's any value in knowing whether or not a drug is safe by at least theoretically disinterested party.
I think there's value in that, and I think that private agencies could do the same thing the government's doing now. I mean, I don't see why a ratings agency would that just rated or tested drugs, you know, and gave their own, like, seal of approval would be any more likely to be corrupt than the FDA would.
I'm not sure I follow what you're saying with rating agencies, but, I mean, why do you think that we have an FDA? Do you think that things worked out better before we had an FDA to determine whether or not drugs were safe? I mean, like, for instance, like, what would you do, like, with thalidomide babies, for instance? Like, do you know what thalidomide babies are?
Not really.
Are you familiar with is it thalidomide, I think it was called? It was a drug given to pregnant women. And was not sufficiently studied. I think it was actually taken off the market in Europe. I may be confused about it. But the point is that babies were born with tremendous birth defects because of this drug. Now, I suppose if we have no FDA testing on it and going back, I don't know how this drug would be taken off. I mean, who would be the one to point out that this is happening?
I mean, I'm sure the people who bought it, I don't know, does the drug company tell the people that it's safe whenever they sell it to them, that it won't have any side effects? Or, I mean, if they told them that it's safe and then it has negative effects, they could always sue for fraud because, you know, nobody takes a drug expecting it to give them birth defects. But, yeah.
Right. And how would they know?
Probably be a lot more guarantees that would, you know, be subject to lawsuits if there was no FDA approval. I mean, that was an FDA-approved drug, right? Or was it?
I mean, I believe it may have been, but it was ultimately the FDA that took it off the market.
Do people want to continue taking it after it was shown to be causing birth defects anyway?
Well, I don't think people knew that it was. I think it was a function of the FDA that took it off the market.
I think if there were no FDA, I'm sure there would be websites that people could go to look up.
But there was no web. There was no internet at the time. So you're saying that just the internet has made. You're just saying that the internet. The internet, and I should say the FDA never licensed thalidomide for general use.
All right.
Taking this drug because it was supposedly good for pregnant women, and It was supposedly like a wonder drug for insomnia and coughs and colds and headaches. And it was supposed to, it was given to, pregnant women for, you know, like when you feel, morning sickness. And so it ended up creating these horrible, birth defects.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the FDA, you know, whenever they, hold drugs back for long periods of time, that hurts people too, though. You know, if they hold back a drug that can, you know, cure people with an illness for like 7 years, they can end up killing, you know, hundreds of people.
Yeah, no, I know. They hold back drugs to test their efficacy. But, I mean, do you really think that drugs should just be allowed to go on the market with no testing and just like, you know, you get if you get birth defects, you sue. But you know what? That's not necessarily, you know, if you got a birth defect from a drug that your mother took because a company lied about it, do you really think that if you have no arms, let's say, that it's going to be some type of consolation that, but I'm at least I'm rich?
Probably not, but that's just how lawsuits work. I mean, they can't predict, you know, the fraud so much.
No, I know. That's why I'm saying that lawsuits are not an effective way of dealing with the idea that people could be given drugs that are dangerous to them.
But if you just have an organization like the FDA that holds drugs back until they're absolutely sure that they're, you know, 100% safe, you're going to hurt people too by holding back good drugs for a long period of time. I mean,
do you think that on balance, if you had no one examining drugs and companies which have been shown to put out drugs, even after they know, test after test, even though they know that maybe they have to settle some lawsuits and that's just going to be the cost of doing business, do you think on balance it is healthier for the population to have an agency that is making sure that these drugs are not harmful? Or do you think that the wonder drugs that you anticipate that are being held up by the FDA would provide more benefit on balance?
Well, I mean, I really have no way of knowing that, but I mean, I've heard statistics, or not statistics, I've heard estimates that like certain, like the FDA blocked the use of beta blockers of heart medication for 7 years, and that's been estimated to result in the deaths of like 119,000 people. So I don't know if any drug they released early killed that many people or not, but that's just one example.
So you just don't think there should be any testing period? We should just put drugs. We should just
allow
drugs.
I just think that.
Do we should? Do, I mean, what you're suggesting is
by private agencies.
You're just saying, but what wouldn't that private agency spend a certain period of time to make sure that the drugs are safe?
Yeah, they would, but the only difference is that if a drug's out on the market and you're dying of a terminal illness and you want to try it and a private agency hasn't approved it, that doesn't mean that you're not allowed to try it. The FDA prevents you from trying things that you want to try. I mean, I think people should be free to use what they want. If they think something's going to help them, they should be able to try it.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, that's an interesting opinion. So I've got a pill that'll cure everything that ails you. And if it ends up really hurting you, you can sue me. Or I may just go, you know, bankrupt my company and walk away. You really think that's a more efficient? You think that's really a more efficient way of protecting people's health?
What did you say about he might just what to his company?
Well, I'm going to create a pill that's going to solve all your problems. You're going to take it. You're going to find that it gives you a lot of side effects. You know what? I didn't know. I'm the company. I didn't know it creates side effects. I mean, look, wanted to take it.
Like I said, they could have, you know, companies that you know, test the effectiveness of drugs like the FDA does.
Yeah, I had my producer. He set up a company where he tests the effectiveness of drugs. He said it was okay.
Well, come on. I mean, this is, like, ridiculous. I mean, people don't have to take a drug if it's, like, there's some shady stuff behind who's...
What makes you say it's shady?
Like, if a guy makes up a company and sells some drug and makes ridiculous claims about it, then, you know, there's another... Like,
that's, you know what that's called? Business.
It's just some random agency that approved it. Okay, I mean, I just don't think people are that gullible and, like,
Well, I mean, you know, I think you're living in a world where, I mean, I don't know if it's just sort of like you're not aware of basically this happens all the time and that the FDA stands in between people putting out dangerous drugs. I mean, even there's many times where they're not even capable of stopping that. You know, Vioxx, Yaz. I mean, the list goes on and on. Fen-Phen. The list goes on and on of these drugs. And yes, I guess we could live in a world where it's just like it's just Russian roulette. You take a drug. If it turns out bad, you're still alive. Maybe you can sue the company. Maybe you can't. Maybe the company just goes bankrupt. I mean, there's a lot of businesses that sell, you know, the con artists out there who they sell a product. The company goes bankrupt. They come back out and do it. Maybe they pay a couple of fines. Maybe they pay, they make a settlement with somebody and they just keep doing business.
All right. But I mean, you have to know that there are drugs that are held back and that ends up killing people.
Yes,
too.
I'm sure. There's no doubt in my mind that there are drugs that could be helping people that are held back so that we can be sure that our drug supply is safe. Of course. Of course, and that would happen even under the private voluntary process that you're talking about. Those drugs would be held back.
Well, I mean, in some ways,
why are these companies spending so much time developing this? They should just put it out there when they even have the idea and just see how it works. Right? I mean, supposedly internally they take time to develop it. They're wasting their time too, aren't they?
No, they're not wasting time because if a drug company just released a bunch of hazardous drugs, I mean, they're not going to last long if people just keep getting sick every time they take them.
So?
I mean, they know that they have an interest in making sure that they're safe.
You are just not aware of, then how do you explain things like Vioxx? How do you explain things like Yaz? How do you explain things like the Ford Pinto? How do you explain things like thimaldamide. I mean, companies do this all the time.
They do it intentionally, or they just like imperfect?
Intentionally. In other words, we know that it's going to cost us X number of dollars to fix the Ford Pinto from exploding when it's banged in from behind. And we know that if we have to settle this case, ultimately it's going to cost Y. Well, Y is less than X, so we're just going to wait. Companies make that decision every day. Every day. You've got to educate yourself on this. Go read about the Ford Pinto.
Go read. I'm aware that the Ford Pinto probably wasn't the safest car in the world, but I mean, it was probably, you know, it would probably cost more. You can always make improvements to a car to make it safer, you know. But some people want a cheap car, even if it's not safe, probably, right? I mean, not everybody wants every single safety feature that they can get.
This was a defect. Cars are not supposed to, their gas tanks are not supposed to explode upon a slight impact from behind. Go Google Ford Pinto.
Was it, I mean,
and you should educate yourself
about it. People buy cars, I don't really know all the, I'll Google Ford Pinto, but.
Yeah.
I mean, did the car company tell people that it was going to explode? I mean, that seems like failure to disclose important information.
No, they didn't tell people that it was going to explode. They found out about it.
I can see that being considered a form of fraud that would be, you know, punishable by law if they didn't tell people.
Well, they were sued. But, you know, the way our corporate structure is set up, very, very hard to get criminal liability for officers of a company in that situation. They were sued. They paid out, but it is considered the classic case, the classic tort case in this country where it shows the weighing that a company does. Is it cheaper for us just to pay out for the number of deaths that we anticipate this is going to create versus actually fixing a problem we know exists? And they just do a number calculation. Yeah, what are you going to do? All right, well, listen, I appreciate the phone call.
All right.
But you should call back after you read about the Ford Pinto and see if it changes your mind. If it doesn't, I'd be curious to know why.
All right, I might do that.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate you calling in.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll go a little longer, folks. All right, let's come on, guys. All right, you're calling from a 937 area code. Who's this?
This is Shaw from Ohio. I guess I missed a hilarious joke.
we just had a caller on. We just had a caller on who was libertarian. It was just sort of interesting.
Okay, that's kind of what I want to talk about. Is it not hilarious that these guys, their entire philosophy when it comes to like consumer products or whatever, is like, oh, people will read about it. They'll know about it. Well, wait a minute. Didn't Ayn Rand die from lung cancer because of she didn't believe it would give her cancer? Are we not now like facing global warming because they're spending billions of dollars convincing people that global warming doesn't exist? You know,
but to be fair, when global warming comes, then we can sue somebody.
That's true. That's true. We can sue.
We'll sue Exxon.
And,
yeah, as we're all
underground bunkers.
As we're all trying to get across the border into Canada, and society's broken down, maybe we'll have the opportunity to sue Exxon. And next time we'll know.
Yeah, exactly. The people of Fukushima, they know now not to trust, you know, those people now. But this is what I kind of wanted to get at. Like, this is the problem with not only libertarianism, but the conservative movement is it's a principle-based philosophy, whereas liberalism is an empirical-based philosophy.
Yes,
That girl is trying to fit all of her... She's like, well, the government's bad, shouldn't do, like, all this stuff. And now she's trying to shove all this stuff into that philosophy when none of it makes any sense.
It's all ridiculous. About freedom, whatever that means. And they have these principles, and these principles are – I mean, to a certain extent, this is why you see this relationship. When you talk about economic libertarianism, it is in some ways sort of a fundamentalism that is not unlike religion. We have this notion
of
freedom. It is a moral value. It trumps reality, empiricism, outcomes, anything. I mean, that's why, you know, and I've said this before, as a liberal, I am interested in outcomes. And
exactly.
I am interested, if we can agree what we want for society, I am interested in what's the best path to get there. So I don't have these broad-based principles that I'm trying to fit everything into. It is based upon looking for outcomes that benefit society in a very broadly speaking term and pursue those without infringing upon some explicit set of rights that are enumerated in the Constitution, unless these rights, I mean, there's no rights that we perceive as absolute. We curtail the First Amendment in certain situations. And all of that is a gray area where you debate it based upon what are the outcomes. If you yell fire in a crowded theater, you could be hurting people and you're infringing upon their rights. I mean, so these you're absolutely spot on. I mean, she has this notion of freedom and then tries to squeeze improbable, empirical, anecdotal, you know, it got to, like, I've heard stories of cancer drugs that they're holding up, and maybe 110,000 people die a year from not getting this drug because it's being tested to see if it's safe. I mean, this is just, there's no logic there, but I appreciate the call, buddy.
All right, bye.
Calling from a 503 area code, who's this?
Hey, this is Tom. I'm sorry for picking up the radio, so I don't need feedback here. Hey, I feel sorry for you for having to put up that last call. Not the last one, but the one before.
Are you there?
I think there was a lot faster. Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you got to talk into your phone or your microphone or whatever it is.
Oh, sorry about that, Sam. I think there was a lot faster way to dispense with her philosophy. To me, it's these people are market fundamentalists.
Right.
What they believe is that the free market, left to its own devices, is always going to, you know, produce the greatest good.
Right.
What they don't understand, and what Alan Greenspan, who was kind of a you know, big believer in this, finally admitted that he was wrong, that markets are not self-correcting. The problem is limited liability, it's one. And second is this kind of a quote that became kind of famous on Wall Street, and it went, I won't be here, you won't be here.
Right.
But we can do tremendous damage, but walk away so rich and with the benefit of working for a corporation and having that corporation have limited liability, the carnage you leave in the wake is not your problem.
Absolutely.
Now, what she believes...
And I would also say there's a corollary to that, which is that we just, to the extent that we are held accountable for that damage, it just becomes a business expense. You know, I mean, we saw it with all this mortgage fraud, right? These investment banks, they pay a pittance. So fine, okay, we make $20 billion, and then we get fined or we pay out in a tort case a couple of billion. I mean, BP is a perfect example of it.
Right.
You know, this is just the cost of doing business. Now,
sure. And then just to extend this a little bit, and I've had debates with, I'm a finance major, and I've dealt with these people all the time, and it drives me nuts. They're religious fanatics. They're no different than the people who don't believe in global warming, because sea levels aren't going to rise in Florida because God said he's going to burn us up next time. He flooded us with Noah. Next time it's going to be fire. So, you know, they're absolutely committed to this philosophy that the wise, all-knowing, invisible hand of the market is perfect. And the philosophy is companies will not produce dangerous products because that's bad for business. And businesses that produce excellent products, in her example, excellent drugs where nobody has ever heard of a side effect, the market will flock to them. And, yeah, that might be true in the long run. But in the short run, they got 50,000 horribly deformed babies.
Right.
You know? And it's, you know, I, as an individual, I don't want to have a chemistry lab in my house. But I have to test everything before I eat it because I might be killing myself for my family. And yeah, I mean, it's just a ridiculous philosophy. And these people believe it. And what bugs me is it's such an ascendant philosophy.
Yeah.
I run into otherwise intelligent people every day who believe this stuff. And I've been in business for 30 years and I've seen the effects. I've seen the dangers that the public is exposed to if a company is not serious about safety. And yeah, I mean, you know, a responsible company that's got a long track record and employs a lot of people is going to be careful. But if you allow me to just whip up some stuff in my house and sell it to people, you know, in your, you know, snake oil like they used to do in the 1880s, you know, by the time you find out that it's dead,
you're out of town.
That it's so dangerous. I'm rich and I'm gone.
Harry Hill, whatever the Henry Hill from what was that? What's the name of that?
Goodfellas.
No, not Goodfellas. The play, the famous the Henry Hill. Is it Oklahoma or whatever? I don't know what it is. I can't even remember. But yes, you're out of town at that point. But your point is
right,
is
and not
great.
Only that.
And that's why I debate these folks. But I got to jump right now because I got to get to I'm up against the clock. But I appreciate the call.
Sure, sure.
Call back.
One real quick other thing is I don't even have to be gone. I can just reincorporate under a different name and do the same thing over and over.
Exactly. And we see that happen all the time. Appreciate the call. All right. Got to go to the IMs. Archie's, regarding the fiscal cliff, oogity boogity, it seems to me that GOP Congress members won't be able to vote on a measure that would increase taxes on high income earners, even if that isn't what the vote would actually be. I think likely the rates will go up for a short period and the Reid will have the Senate introduce legislation. To then lower the rate on everyone, excluding high-income earners, which the GOP won't be able to vote against either. Yes. How likely is it that we will just have a PR fight where the House is pushing one bill and the Senate is pushing the other? I think this will be an impasse because the GOP – well, look, it doesn't matter. Henry Hill, the music man, thank you. It doesn't matter. The tax cuts are going to expire, and the House and the Senate may – they'll end up coming to some agreement on cutting middle-class taxes. A Square, Sam, great interview with Bullitt from Media Matters. They should post that to their site. 5 minutes into it, I thought the David Frum clip from 2008 that Bullitt referenced at the end of your interview, 2008, was the first time I heard that analysis and from a conservative. Not that I'm sorry for Frum and other establishment conservatives are really lamenting their loss of power in the GOP. Hope you have opportunities to raise that up with Chris or Spitzer and the implications of devolution of the GOP into a crazy media movement. I think I mentioned it to Spitzer the other night. Jay Tingle, hate to correct Mr. Schechter, but it was the Connecticut for Lieberman Party, never the Lieberman for Connecticut Party. Indeed. Can you explain to me why Rosenthal thought fit to publish Lieberman's POS opinion in today's Times? That crap belongs in Hyatt's page in the Post. If you please, simply put up a list of all the characters who die in Skyfall. I'm not confident I was able to hear everyone as you listened to them twice over the course of the podcast. I'm sorry. As long as we're giving away endings, the crass racism of Taken reaches a hideous crescendo as the hero confronts the Arab villain who's in full Hollywood Arab garb, threatening to the blonde virgin. Okay, I'm not going to do this three times. It's not a spoiler alert when you reveal a produced movie. Only when you reveal the ending of said movie is that a spoiler alert. Usually one says full disclosure when one reveals one's connection to the subject being covered. Full disclosure is almost the opposite of a spoiler alert. Perhaps this is the source of the confusion that's permitted so many spoilers on the program. I'll go take the survey. Consider, would you actually waste your own time with no listeners trying to educate an ignorant libertarian? How many times do you do that? Are you kidding? Are you kidding me? How many times would I do that? I would do that constantly. I mean, if you're arguing that I shouldn't do that on the show because it's not good for listeners, a lot of listeners enjoy it. But would I do that if I was on my own devices? Are you kidding? It's a lot of fun. Why do you think I'm not on Twitter as much now? Because I get to do it on my show. If there was no show, I'd be doing it on Twitter constantly. I mention this because the stuff does not rise to the level of debate. Just because you give someone a schooling doesn't mean you're giving them their comeuppance. Or does it? I zoned out during a lot of that call. Maybe the exchange was transcendent. I think there's value in it, because you know what, the fact of the matter is, like, this guy, the last call we just had is right. This is ascendant. These perspectives are ascendant, and it's important, I think, that people just see how easily these things are pulled apart.
That's I've received some people asking me, you know, for my public shaming blog. They say, oh, by posting these people's tweets on your blog and letting them know they're racist or stupid, you're not teaching them anything. They're not going to learn anything. They're not going to change their ways. But it's not for that. It's to show other people that these people exist.
Yes. Yes. Juan Miguel, apropos of the Heritage Foundation discussion, I have this vignette from several years ago. I was seated next to a beautiful young lady at a rehearsal dinner for a friend's wedding in Connecticut. I asked her what she did for a living. She said, I work for the Heritage Foundation. I had such a visceral reaction to it, I physically recoiled and said, ooh. Tried to recover and said that I was more of a Brookings Institution kind of guy. I asked what she worked on, and she said, our position on gay marriage. The conversation just devolved from there. If you haven't seen it, watch God Bless America or The World's Greatest Dad, both directed by Bobcat Goldthwait. I think I've seen one of them. Kay Cruz. I knew Bobcat back in the day. Breaking news, Joe Biden accidentally spends $1 trillion coin and vending machine on package of ho-hos. Here's a funny idea. When you go see Red Dawn and get to the part where they yell Wolverines, you yell, God is great, Allahu Akbar. I wonder if a young caller thinks drunk driving should be illegal because it doesn't always result in an accident. Unsafe at any speed by Ralph Nader is the, yes, about the Pintos. Anecdotal, but I was born in the 50s. And I can remember going to school with lots of kids who had missing hands, arms, and feet. Not dozens and dozens, but a few in every grade. Now when I go to my niece's grade school, I can't recall seeing any kid with birth defects. Thank you, FDA. Left Coast Marcus, I think things are looking good for progressives going forward. The election was at the beginning of a rebuke of a nut job Tea Party Republicans. The Republican Party has a chance to dump these freaks and let the moderate, sane Republicans take over. Not going to happen. But we see with Jim Waterloo DeMint going to Heritage Foundation, Rick Frothy Santorum front and center, throwing in Bob's dull face on the handicap treaty, they've decided to double down on nut jobbery. Right. No, well, they have to. Left Coast Marcus, intellectual capacity of a 7-year-old qualified to run the Heritage Foundation. And happy Pearl Harbor Day. Indeed, it's also my sister's birthday. I wonder if the Emperor had a mission accomplished banner on December 8th. Lawyer Matthew. Yes, indeed. Sugar High. Oh, God, yeah, I hated Homeland already, but that face-off between the super terrorists and Claire Danes was just vomit-inducing. All that stuff about America's soft culture, our swimming pools, is that straight from Fox News? Also, Dogtooth. Would you watch if I... No, I'm going to watch it. I will. Someday I will. I'm seeing Maron tonight in Philadelphia. Got any messages to pass along? Just, I would just say, like, don't tell him I said this, but just say, like, how could you not have Sam Cedar in the garage? Just because it would agitate him. Did Ford tell people it was going to explode? Quote, oh, my God. PF1800, I did the survey. It's very easy. The drug company's interest in not being sued will cause them to hold back drugs until the company believes it's safe enough to sell. Drugs may not get to market faster. The caller also assumed the companies would ensure the purity of their drugs and label them correctly, not to mention providing safe dosage. Yes, we need far better regulation of drugs than we have now, I think, because they can be sold off market. That's where you get a lot of these problems. Filibustering, the act of filibustering your own bill. I don't get it. Homeopathic remedies are a multi-million dollar industry selling placebos, proof that free markets reward scams. Thalidomide, yes, I'm sorry, you're right. Great movie that uses the Ford Pinto case plot is Class Action with Gene Hackman and Mary Elizabeth Mastriano. Defeatocrat, wow, least prepared libertarian ever. They say that libertarians are just Republicans who like to smoke pot. I give you Exhibit A. PhD chemist. I don't want everyone to vote. Our leverage in the election quite candidly goes up. That's Paul Weyrich. Yes, that libertarian caller should watch Brad Pitt's monologue from Fight Club. A plus B plus C is less than D. Dry Zone 9, blah, 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 regurgitated rhetoric and libertarian manifesto from a caller in Ron Paul pajamas. Yes, please give my six-month-old some medicine that has no regulation attached to it. I'll sleep great at night. Ask Ayn Rand how bad the government was when she collected Medicare after she got lung cancer. Into architecture. She sounds like she's getting tired. I think you're taxing her very limited mental faculties. I feel sorry for her. This is painful. Have you seen Cloud Atlas yet? Go see Cloud Atlas and then see it again. I got to see that. Cloud Atlas. What's stopping the drug companies from making you sign an arbitration agreement as the phone companies do when currently you sign a contract? Indeed, you're unable to sue them in a court case. It's illegal. It's legal currently. Also, the caller said companies will get a bad rep if they put out fatal drugs. Can't they just change their name, like Blackwater to Jay to Academia? My point isn't just a critique of libertarianism, just playing devil's advocate on a poorly argued call. Also, how many major drug companies are there? A few? What if they have a series of deadly drugs? People are going to boycott them all? Indeed. 7676. Sam, please. This woman is worse than the guy who lives in the parents' basement. Stop, please. Avedon. Thalidomide. Yes, I know. I can't pronounce it. Tapes. I expect the government to protect Big Pharma from huge damage assessments against nasty little people who deliberately get sick or killed from their offensive little drugs. And I expect the government to protect our freedom and liberty to be destroyed by drugs with incomplete or deliberately misleading private drug testing. And I expect the government to protect government's big fat patents, which they use to drive up the cost of their nasty and destructive drugs. But don't come between me and my medications, boy. Agnes Liberalist, Libertarian Utopia, probably happened when there's no oversight. Loki, hey, Sam, nice surprise to see you on Chris Hayes' show last weekend. He ended up talking about Washington pot legalization on Sunday, but he only seemed to have drug warrior-esque concern trolls on. No one from Normal or Leap. Have you thought about having someone on to talk about legalization in Washington and Colorado? Yeah, we should do that. Sam, that libertarian sounded like so many libertarians I've encountered. They live in a fantasy world. I'm sorry, I can't read the whole thing. I got to jump. Number one cause death in U.S., heart disease. 599,413 die a year. The caller mentioned beta blockers being withheld by FDA. In doing so, 150,000 died the drugs could have saved. Let the other 600,000 prospective patient goes balls out and buy the drugs in the free market. Risky? Nah, it's liberty, baby. Bingo Mosquito, Music Man. R. Frain, unsafe at any speed. Yes. Clower, Nader's unsafe at any speed. You got trouble, I say, right here in River City. Waking 1985, the final I am of the week. Nurse that took prank call from Australia. DJs about Kate Middleton commits suicide. Oh, God. That's horrible. Yeah, we can't end on that. Let's go with Jay Tingle. Final one, unsafe at any speed, referred to the Chevy Corvair. Oh, indeed. All right, folks. See you Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. I wasn't looking when I Somehow I lost my drive between the 101.